Hello, everyone, and welcome to another expert interview at the Innovation and Creativity Summit 2017. I'm very happy to have David Goldstein with us today. David is a researcher and the author of the book Creative You, which is all about finding out your personality type when it comes to creativity. David, it's really good having you with us today.
Thanks, Nick. Appreciate it. Happy to be here.
So for people who don't know you or your work, can you just give us a brief background as to how you got into the field of creativity and what made you interested in it?
Sure, that's a great question. And, you know, like many people, I got into creativity as a kid, drawing, painting, doing photography. Around the year 2000, I was running a successful business and I wasn't relaxed and I needed something to do. So I started taking watercolor classes. I wanted to get back into doing something artistic in the evening. And I took three different beginning watercolor classes, and each one with different teachers, each one was saying something specific about what they should be, what they wanted. You have to work from photograph. You have to work from life. You have to work for your imagination. You're using the wrong color. And I saw a lot of people being discouraged, and I was a little discouraged too. And even though I saw myself as being creative, at least I was as a kid, I kept trying, but I wasn't being creative as the same way as a teacher was saying you need to be creative. Then I took a class. I got talked into taking a class from an advanced teacher who I didn't really think I fit into the class, but a friend said, no, she's really good. She'll let you take it. I didn't think I was advanced. But after about a year, she gave a questionnaire to know about our personal style. It was 109 questions. And at the same time that she gave us this questionnaire, I had just moved into a new neighborhood. I met Otto Krager, who is a world-renowned personality type expert. And kind of a funny thing about our neighborhood is he would give everyone the Myers-Briggs assessment when we moved in. It was kind of a very social place. And he was teaching about Myers-Briggs and personality type theory at the same time that I had learned from the teacher. We're learning about our creative style. And I had one of these aha moments. And I have aha moments all the time. But this one seemed kind of like a big deal. So I brought it to Otto, and he thought it was a good idea. We were both too busy to think about it at the time. But part of this aha moment, maybe we could relate to it. I was sitting in the art class. I knew the woman she had a table with, and she was painting the details of every brick and every shingle on the house and making sure the colors were exactly perfect. And then the guy across the room, who I was also friends with, he would be doing these very large paintings, emotionally, whatever color. You could tell if he was in a good mood or a bad mood, whatever it was, it showed in his artwork. And I made this connection, and it seemed very strong. And Otto liked it too, but we were both really busy doing our own things and we didn't really have time to pursue it further. Then several years later, and I saw the connection everywhere. And I saw people being discouraged all the time from thinking of themselves as creative. But my wife was given a position where she was offered a job in Hong Kong. And I had to give up my two businesses here because they told me I wasn't allowed to work, which is kind of hard for me, believe it or not, because I work all the time. So I thought this would be a perfect time for Otto and I to work on the book. He was about ready to retire, so I started researching it then. And that's really how it came about.
And what exactly is this book, the book Creative You, and what is the concept of your creative personality type?
The concept is that we all are creative. It's not just the guy in the graphics department. It's not just the singer on the stage. There's so many different ways to be creative, and we all have this ability. But the problem is we're all discouraged away at a very young age. And another thing that got me started with this was that, and I remember things that shocked me. It was a long time ago. I remember in the second grade, the kid next to me saying that he couldn't draw. And it was shocking to think anyone at that age could think they couldn't do something. And it's kind of come full circle because now my son is about 8 years old. And I encouraged him recently to enter an art contest at his school. And he's pretty good and he's very musical. And he came home, I don't want to talk. I don't want to talk. I'm like, what's the matter? A couple of days later, I asked him, what happened? And he said, well, my painting wasn't selected. And it was a very abstract painting. And I said, well, what got selected? He goes, well, a very realistic painting. And I said, well, how many people entered? He said, 39. I said, well, how many got selected? He said, one. So then I picked up one of the art history books, a kid's art history book. We started flipping through pages, looking at all these different artists. And I said, well, okay, so if you were the judge, which one would you pick? He goes, I can't. They're all different. They all have different styles. And I said, exactly. And they're all creative, and we all have different ways of being creative. And so many people are discouraged away from being thinking of themselves as creative at a young age. It's so much simpler to say, I'm not creative, and leave it up to someone else. But today the world is changing so much. We all have to be adaptive. And our greatest strengths come from our creativity, from being ourselves. So this is a passion that really got me to want to share this with a lot of people. So that's kind of where that came about.
And the concept of the creative personality type, it's very similar to what you talked about earlier, which is the Myers-Briggs personality type indicator. A lot of people, and myself included, did this assessment when we went into a certain company to find out what's our working style. And for people who don't know what it is, could you just give us a brief background on how the assessment works and what it tells you?
Sure. There are many different personality type assessments. They've been around since the Greeks. This one is based on Carl Jung's work. And it's basically, it lets you understand your own preference. So in order for you to know yourself better, and it's not a hard and fast rule. It's not like I'm always this type, I'm always that type. It's what you prefer. And when you're doing the work you prefer, you're also often most creative. You spend the most time at it. You develop the most skill. But it has to do with, it's similar to the Big Five and the DISC, which there are a lot of tests. I seem to like this better than the others because it's non-diagnostic. There are no bad types. So it's a very healthy way to look at yourself. And it's very empowering and knowing. Some people think personality types can put you in a box, but it really, you can never go wrong by knowing more about yourself and what conditions you're most creative in. And that gives you, you know, creativity takes courage, and knowing yourself gives you the courage to be yourself. And that's kind of the basis of there's 16 different types, but those 16 types are just a starting point.
And the 16 different types, yeah, they a lot of people will quote themselves as being either a ENTJ or ISTA or whatever it's called.
Right.
The ones that are sort of the most recognizable traits that a lot of people quote are the fact that this test sort of tells you if you are more of an extrovert or more of an introvert.
That's right.
Yeah, I think that's what a lot of people here are really interested in, because quite often that judgment sort of seems to indicate whether or not you're creative. They think that extroverted people are creative and introverted, quiet people don't have as many ideas. What's your view on that?
Yeah, that's really good. And first, to break up a misconception about introversion and extroversion, it's not how shy you are. It's not how gregarious you are. It's where you get your energy from. And extroverts tend to get their energy from being around people and engaging with objects. Introverts tend to get their energy from being alone. And you could think, you know, when I go to a party, do I get tired very quickly? I might enjoy it for an hour or two, but do I get tired of people and want to go home after a few hours? Or after a few hours, if you're an extrovert, you might be tired at the beginning until you start getting involved in the conversations, but do people energize you and you want to stay up all night, go to an after party and invite people over the next day? And, you know, people think, well, I'm a little bit of both. And I say it's like jumping into cold water. It's energizing for the first few minutes, but it gets tired very quickly if you're in your non-preference. And when it comes to creativity, you know, a lot of introverts, they like to reflect, and they might not have the ideas on demand as much as an extrovert. And they might see themselves as uncreative for that reason. Like in a brainstorming session, someone might say, oh, you're not very creative. You didn't say anything. But it might take a week for them to come up with this amazing idea that's well thought out. So the idea is to try to give introverts time ahead of time to think about the idea or to approach them afterwards. Now, an extrovert, sometimes they think they're not creative either because they don't like to lie on a hill, a big grassy hill, you know, daydreaming all day. They are creative by engaging in the world as it is today, or not necessarily today, how they might see it in the future, but it could be like setting up a photograph, making sure everyone is placed in the right spot that all the faces show. Extroversion is moving things around. You talk to an introvert and they'll envision what the vase or the cup will look like on the other side of the room. The extrovert will get up and actually move it and place it there and see what happens. It's just a different way of looking at creativity. And it's just the tip of the iceberg of how personality type affects the way we're creative. if you find the right environment, an introvert, they could be working at the desk and it could be a room full of people, and to take a break, they need to go for a walk and be alone. An extrovert, if they're working alone, they might take a break by going to the coffee and talking to some other people and engaging to get more energy. So it's about knowing yourself. Obviously, we both have to survive in both types of environments, but we do our best work and our most creative work when we have the most energy in the environment that suits us best.
And I think that's the important thing to get across here. A lot of people, as you said, they get frustrated through some point in their life that they're told, oh, this isn't like that good. You don't have the skill to be an artist or a dancer or a singer. And they assess themselves, therefore, as not being creative. But you're suggesting that everyone is creative, just in different ways.
Absolutely. And one other piece to that, which I tie to personality type theory, but it's not really directly, but anything creative has two points, two parts. There's the idea, and we all have ideas. We all have ideas all the time. We also have to have a technique to express the idea. So I might have a great idea for a dance, but I've never taken a dance lesson. I don't know the techniques. If I don't know how to write a business plan, I might have a great idea for a business. But the technique is learning how to write a business plan. It could be learning how to paint. It doesn't come naturally to anybody, learning to draw. Anyone could learn to do these things. But if you don't spend the time and the effort to be a writer, to be a communicator, your ideas don't go anywhere. So I suggest to everyone, learn a technique, one or two or three techniques. Learn how to make a video. Learn how to do anything to express your ideas that you have, to put them into action. And a lot of times people think, well, I can't, you know, if we didn't learn how to drive a car, we wouldn't know how to drive a car, even if we thought about how to get to a place. It's all about learning the techniques. And that's a big part of why many of us think we're not creative.
Do you have any sort of examples of the difference between a extrovert being creative and an introvert being creative? Because I know a lot of people, they like sort of, they understand things better if you've got a case study or an example behind it.
Sure. Well, one example is I'm actually an introvert. You might think it or not from watching me talk, and I'm not hiding, you know. But my co-author, Otto Krager, was extremely charismatic. In fact, my goal when I wrote this book, he had three best-selling books before this, was just to be the behind-the-scenes guy. I had no idea, no intention of ever talking about it. But he was, you know, 79, 80 by the time the book came out. He had a stroke. He died soon after it. And all of a sudden, you know, I feel this idea was so important that we need to get it out that I end up having to talk about it. And I'm developing skills. I'm not him, but I'm a different person. But when we had ideas, I would say, Otto, I have this concept, this flash that would go great in this book. And he'd say, oh, that's great. Let's get everyone together and talk about it. Let's call up this person, that person. Let's get them all together in a room. And I was like, no. Let me do some more research in the library. Let me try to find some examples. And this is how it came about. You know, someone like Salvador Dali was a extrovert. He was a showman as much as an artist, and he loved the spotlight. While someone like Jackson Pollock never said anything, he hardly said anything ever, and he was very much like time alone, and he lived really far out in the country at the end of Long Island, and he liked to be alone. And he really didn't get famous until an extrovert named Clement Greenberg, a very famous art critic, started putting meaning and stories behind the paintings. I don't know if the stories and meaning were ever part of Jackson Pollock's work, but they were put in. And Jackson Pollock would name his paintings. That's number 47A. And then Clement Greenberg would give it a big flowery name that people had attached to. And one of the suggestions I have to everyone is find people of different types to collaborate with. If you understand each other, Otto and I understood each other. We worked extremely well together. I did my library research and individual interviews with individuals. And he did all the stuff with big groups. You know, he would talk to 20,000 people. He would love it. The more people, the better. And what we did is we made a combined product. And what Jackson Pollock did with Clement Greenberg was a combined product. Salvador Dali, it seemed like he didn't need, he was creating stuff and talking, and he was interesting figure. But I think that could possibly give you, we have tons of examples in the book. But,
absolutely. Are there any other things around the spectrum of one type or the other when it comes to creativity that aren't just extrovert versus introvert?
There is, and something that's a lot less talked about is intuition and sensing. It's how we gather information. And see, personality type is all about how we gather information from the world and how we make decisions. And that's the same process, I believe, that we have as far as the creative process. We all see the world differently. We all make decisions differently. But this is a framework of how we see the world and how we make decisions. Some people, the sensing types, tend to see the world in the details. They use their five senses. They're very concrete. They're very in today. They care about solving immediate problems. While the intuitive type, they're much more abstract. They don't necessarily need to see anything or touch anything. It's more conceptual. It's more general. They don't really notice what's happening today. They could have mustard running down their sleeve, and they don't really notice because they're thinking about something 5 years from now. And they tend to solve future-oriented problems. And it's a huge difference in how we approach creativity. And you can see being in a meeting, you know, a pipe could be burst, and the sensing people in the room are like, well, let's get the buckets and go out and fix it. The intuitives might be saying, well, let's figure out why it broke, and let's think how we can prevent this from happening in the future. And the sensing people are saying, no, get out there. It's flooding the factory floor. And the intuitive's like, well, let's first examine all the issues to fully understand the problem. The two different ways of solving problems, and the intuitives might prevent this from ever happening again, but the sensing might stop it immediately, the emergency. And it's really an important concept. The sensing artists tend to paint, for example, all the details from edge to edge. They like realistic colors. They like the woman who sat across the desk for me. They like to paint the bricks. The intuitives, they might paint the building or the flower. The intuitives are much more general. They might paint the field. They might paint the building in a town. It's more a general way of looking. The colors might not be as realistic. And it flows into so many different things. It flows into the business plan. Are we solving today's problems or tomorrow's problems? Henry Ford didn't invent the automobile. He seemed to be a sensing type, and he made these incremental changes within a system. He kept pushing the cost down and making the process more efficient along the assembly line as a sensing type. Thomas Edison seemed more like an intuitive type. He created with nothing existed before. He created phonographs and light bulbs, and there weren't really pressed things before. He just kind of came up with entirely new things. It didn't look like anything before. Ford's car looked like it was a combination of a bicycle and boat. And it looked like a combination of a bicycle and boat. On the other hand, Edison's didn't look like anything that we really imagined before. The sensing usually tend to, and it's not a hard and fast rule, the sensing types look in the future in the big picture in theories. The intuitive types also look at details. They have to look at details of today, otherwise they couldn't even function in the world. But it's a preference. It's where your best work tends to come from. The sensing types tend to like to create by juxtaposing, by adding things together. And I like to say, add a 1 plus a 2, and you get a 12. You got a 1 and a 2 next to each other. You cook a meal, and the carrots are on one side, and the peas are on the other side, and you have the steak. The intuitives, they tend to merge things together, so you can't really tell where they came from. If they add a 1 and a 2, they might get something completely different, like a 3. It's completely different. It doesn't look like a 1 or a 2. Or they might throw the carrots and peas and steak together and make a stew. And after it sits and marinates and cooks for a couple of days, you can't even tell the flavors. They all melt together. And it's just something we noticed through our research of interviewing people, looking at famous artists, and through Otto's lifetime of experience. He trained tens of thousands of people, and he was an unbelievable resource as far as putting together all these theories. So, and they are theories. It's a beginning point.
So do you have any examples, again, of the creative expression from a intuitive versus sensing famous person?
Sure. Norman Rockwell, you could look at his paintings. They're very detailed. The color of people's, a briefcase would look like a briefcase. The sky would be blue. And you'd be able to tell what is happening. An intuitive type might be someone like Turner, who was very abstract. And he started out more realistic, but as he understood himself and got further into his career, he became more abstract. And he didn't care so much if you could tell what the little blobs were actually people, or he just cared about the big effect of, I'm sure you're familiar with his work, these big glowing seascapes, and you could see them from across the room. And it's more like the whole thing is what you cared about, not the details. And that could give you one example of the difference that I see, and we see in the artwork of the two personality types.
It's interesting you mentioned that he started off more realistic and then moved into his signature style. Because do you think that these personality types and creative personality types are kind of set from birth, or do people change over time?
It's believed that the personality types remain constant. Our art style might have changed because we go to school and we learn. The teachers tell us, this is how you draw. And we see examples, and we don't really become ourselves till later in life, and they call that type development. There have been cases where people have taken the Myers-Briggs and it's changed over time. And one of the things is often we take it based on how we take it wrong. We take it based on how we think we're supposed to answer the questions, based on our work environment, based on our job requirements. But I suggest to anyone who takes the assessment, take it how you think you are on a sad day where you have nothing to do and it's your time and it's the way you actually are. Because it's a self-assessment, sometimes we're wrong about ourselves, but we don't really change over time. And what we do is we appreciate the non-preferences more. I happen to be an intuitive and I appreciate details much more than I ever did. I know it's not my best, where my best work's going to come from, but I learned to appreciate it. And I think that's where we see some of the variation. One other point about the Myers-Briggs, which is a misconception, is people think I'm an extreme extrovert or an extreme introvert. It's not, when you fall far from the scale, that means you're sure that you're an introvert or an extrovert. If you're in the middle, it just shows you're not sure. If you're not sure, sometimes you could move back and forth of what you believe you are. So
it's interesting. We're coming up to the end of the interview. And one thing I like to ask all the experts is, if you've got one tip or one actionable insight that people can try out this afternoon or this week to start becoming more creative or getting more value out of their innovation, what would you recommend they try?
Well, one thing they could do is just a simple exercise is they could look out the window and either describe it in any form they know how. They could draw it, they could describe it in words. And afterwards, look at it and say, did I describe the teeny details or did I describe the big picture? And that might give you a hint if you're an intuitive or a sensing type. But the bigger thing is, I say, you can never go wrong by learning more about yourself. And you can never go wrong by, you gain confidence by understanding yourself. And confidence is needed in creativity. In order to stand up when we do something creative, we're doing something unique and different. Everyone looks at us, it creates attention. In order to have confidence, we have to know ourselves. And understanding our personality type using the model I use or any system really helps us develop self-confidence. And that's really one of the most important things about creativity.
David, it's been wonderful speaking with you, and I really encourage everyone watching and listening to find out more about you and the work that you do and your book. We're going to have links to your resources down below the video here. Can you just quickly describe where those links are going to take people?
Sure. My main website is davidbgoldstein.com. You have to put the B in. There's a lot of David Goldsteins. And that will take you to a main page, which will give links to my blog and links to how to get the book if you're interested in that. And just some of the other things I'm doing, keeping up with. So.
Perfect. It's been wonderful having you, and I look forward to speaking again with you soon.
Thanks so much, Nick. Really appreciate it.
Congratulations on being part of the Innovation and Creativity Summit. I'm sure that if you continue to watch the other expert interviews, you will experience an improvement in your capability to turn your ideas into something valuable. But don't forget, to get the very best experience and ensure you don't miss any of the priceless lessons, you should invest in yourself with the All Access Pass. Not only will this give you exclusive lifetime access to watch all the lessons whenever is best for you, you will also get all the interviews as downloadable audio files so you can learn on the go, full transcripts so you can read and analyze the great advice and tips, and exclusive bonuses not available to anyone else. Click the link below to get your All Access Pass now.